जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। थैंक यू। गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रजजन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रजजन रंजन, यमुना तीरवनचारी, यमुना तीरवनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रजजन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रजजन रंजन, यमुना तीरवनचारी, यमुना तीरवनचारी, यमुना तीरवनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की
जय, समवेद भक्तवृंद की जय,
जय निताय गौर ब्रह्मानंद। Hare Krishna. So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 18, called as Diti Vows to kill King Indra. So we'll be reading text 31 and we'll also go through text 32 because text 31 and 32 don't have any purports. So we'll focus on the purports on text 33 and 34.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवतीर्नैष्टिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः.
टेक्स्ट 31.
एवं शुश्रूषितस्तात एवं शुश्रूषितस्तात भगवान् कश्यपस्त्रिया भगवान् कश्यपस्त्रिया प्रहस्य परमप्रीतो प्रहस्य परमप्रीतो दितिमाहाभिनन्द्य च दितिमाहाभिनन्द्य च एवं शुश्रूषितस्तात भगवान् कश्यपस्त्रिया प्रहस्य परमप्रीतो 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 दीतिमाहाभिनन्द्य च एवं शुश्रूषितस्तात భగవాన్ కశ్యప స్త్రియా ప్రహస్య పరమ ప్రీతో దీతి మహాభినంద్య చ మాతాజీ ఏవం శుశ్రూషితస్తాత భగవాన్ కశ్యప స్త్రియా ప్రహస్య పరమ ప్రీతో దితి మహాభినంద్య చ ఏవం శుశ్రూషితస్తాత భగవాన్ కశ్యప స్త్రియా ప్రహస్య పరమ ప్రీతో దితిం ఆహాభినంద్య చ ఏవం
దస్ శుశ్రూషితః బీయింగ్ సర్వ్డ్ తాత్ ఓ డియర్ వన్ భగవాన్ ద పవర్ఫుల్ కశ్యప స్త్రియా బై ద ఉమెన్ ప్రహస్య స్మైలింగ్ పరమ ప్రీతః బీయింగ్ వెరీ ప్లీజ్డ్ దితిం టు దితి ఆహ్ సెడ్ అభినంద్య అప్రూవింగ్ చ ఆల్సో ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ ఓ మై డియర్ వన్ ద మోస్ట్ పవర్ఫుల్ సేజ్ కశ్యప సారీ O my dear one, the most powerful sage Kashyapa, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife Diti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. There is no purport, so we'll go to the next one. Kashyapa Muni said, O beautiful woman, O irreproachable lady, since I am very pleased by your behavior. You may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? There is no purport here as well. We will go to 33-34. A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. The supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruitive workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Purport, Vashila Prabhupada ki jai. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9.23, Ya api anya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvitah te api mam eva kaunteya yajanti avidhi purvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. The demigods are various assistants who act like the hands and legs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord, I repeat, One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord and cannot conceive of the exalted position of the Lord is sometimes advised to worship the demigods as various parts of the Lord. If women who are usually very much attached to their husbands worship their husbands as representatives of Vasudev, the women benefit. Just as Ajamil benefited by calling for Narayan, his son. Ajamil was concerned with his son. But because of his attachment to the name of Narayana, he attained salvation simply by chanting that name. In India, a husband is still called Pati Guru, the husband's spiritual master. If husband and wife are attached to one another, for advancement in Krishna consciousness, their relationship of cooperation is very effective for such advancement. Although the names of Indra and Agni are sometimes uttered in the Vedic mantras, for example, Indraya Swaha, Agnaya Swaha. Although these names are uttered, the Vedic sacrifices are actually performed for the satisfaction of the Lord, Vishnu. As long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. Okay. I repeat, as long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, then the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended.
ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाखाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदामहं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं मुखां करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघायते गिरिं यत्कृपा तमहं वंदे श्रीगुरु दीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
ऑलरेडी O my dear one, the most powerful sage, Kashyap, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife, Diti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. So, this chapter starts by describing the lineage of Aditi. Kashyapa Muni had two wives, Aditi and Diti. Through Aditi, whatever lineage came, those are the devatas, the demigods. And so the Bhagavatam in this chapter starts describing who those personalities are in pedigree. Then the Bhagavatam moves on in this chapter to describe the descendants of his other wife, which is Diti, whose lineage is replete with demons. However, suddenly in this pedigree of demons appear the Maruts, who are demigods. So a mother who is constantly producing demonic children suddenly is producing godly children, pious children. So this is very intriguing. So the explanation is given as to how Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, who were the first two children of Diti, were killed by Lord Vishnu himself. However, who did the Chavi Marnega come? Who did the, what is that called as? Who instigated Lord Vishnu to do it? Lord Indra. So, therefore, Diti is upset with Indra because he is the one who did that, who instigated this whole thing. So she wants to seek revenge. So Diti wants to destroy Indra. So she starts with that desire. Now here is the dichotomy in this verse. Here is the contradiction in this section. Diti, now to kill Indra. Indra is a devotee or not? Yes, he is a devotee. Yes, we understand that devatas are Mishri Bhaktas. Just like all of us also. Right? Of course, they are much more devoted than at least I am. But devatas are actually devotees of the Lord. They are in alignment with the Lord's purpose. They work in alignment with the Lord's purpose. But because devatas are also subject to the three modes of material nature, because at the end of the day, they are also jiva tattvas. Devatas are not Vishnu tattvas. Devatas are jiva tattvas. Of course, Vishnu tattva can come as devata. If Lord desires, he can come as a devata. However, generally, they belong to jiva tattva. And therefore, they also come under tathastha shakti, marginal potency. Marginal potency means sometimes there is a tendency or a proclivity to go on this side of devotion or to go on that side of non-devotion. That is tathastha shakti. And most conditioned souls in a day vacillate between these two modes. They sometimes go here, sometimes go there. Sometimes we also do that, right? Sometimes we are overly affectionate with devotees. Sometimes we stop talking to some devotee. So the three modes of material nature act on devotees as well, to the extent that we are not surrendered. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam stathaiva bhajamyaham. Our purity is directly proportional to our extent of surrender. To the extent we are surrendered, we are immune from the three modes of material nature. To the extent we are not surrendered, we are susceptible or vulnerable to these modes. So, Diti, who is ordinarily produced so many asuric children, and when you associate with such asuric children, by default there is a large inclination towards an asuric mentality also, right? So Diti begins, the mood of Diti begins with an asuric mentality, which is not good, not conducive. What is that mentality? To kill a devotee. That's not a good mentality. So the beginning of Diti's mood is very asuric in its nature. But though she has asuric mentality, she follows a very sura process, a Vaishnava process. And because of that, she gets in the end a good outcome. Devotee children. Who doesn't want devotee children? Who doesn't want their children to be devotees, and who doesn't want to beget devotees as their children? Both, everyone wants, right? So she got that outcome. Though she began with an asuric mentality, she got a good outcome. Why? Because the mentality was bad, but the process was purifying. So that is the power of devotional service, which is coming in this section. Whereas, if you look at the mood of Indra, Indra is a devotee. Normally he is in a sura mentality, But because he is tatashta, he is vulnerable, he is subject to the three modes of material nature. So though he all normally acts in accordance with the will of the Lord, he succumbs to his own moment of selfishness and ends up setting a poor example for others. Just a moment of selfishness. A moment of spontaneous impropriety. Wherein he, knowing very well now that she has got children in the womb, he cuts the children into some 49 pieces. Right? That's not very Vaishnavic, if you like. So, we see Asuric side following a devotional process and getting a purified outcome. And we see a devotee succumbing to the three modes of material nature and acting in a poor manner and setting a bad example. So, this is the dichotomy in this particular section. Sorry. I thought I had muted, but it is keeping on buzzing for some reason. I'm talking about insecurity. And then I'll tell you something related. Why my phone is buzzing all the time. So, Indra's mood is based on insecurity. His own insecurity. He's always insecure. That somebody will come and take away his position. Similarly, we are also very insecure. Right? So, you know, based on some insecurity, we set up this ring alarm, whatever. You know, that ring. You know that button which you press, and then people enter your house. So we set up that alarm. So every 1 minute it is telling someone is passing from outside your house. It's irritating. Full night after 3 o'clock I could not sleep. Somebody is passing. I'm going to shut that off. That is my insecurity. So I was talking about insecurity and this is what happened. Alright, so much so for security in this world. So we are, this section talks about Indra's revengeful, Indra's insecurity and his mentality which leads him to certain actions, and Diti's vengeful mentality and a purifying process which has purified her eventually and given her a good outcome. However, today's specific verse focuses at that point in time, in this whole pastime, there is one point in time when Kashyapa Muni is succumbing to Diti's charming words. Prabhuji, you know. So he is succumbing to Diti's charming words. And this is that point when he is succumbing to Diti's charming behavior. And he is also taking some decisions based on that. This is the verse. Now, again there is a dichotomy in this verse. There is a contrast here. This verse shows two aspects of Kashyapa Muni. It shows Kashyapa Muni's vulnerability as a husband. Are husbands vulnerable? Yes. Right. So it shows the Kashyapa Muni's vulnerability as a husband. Nevertheless, Kashyapa Muni, though he is little vulnerable to his wife, still it shows his fixation as a Muni. It shows both. His vulnerability as a husband. But in that vulnerability, he does not lose his wisdom of a Muni that he is. So both are there in this section. Verse 31 and 32 demonstrate his vulnerability, where he is very pleased with his wife just because she has approached him in a very meek manner and a humble manner. He is very pleased. Let us read once again so to get understand the mood. The most powerful sage Kashyapa, being extremely pleased by what? By the mild behavior of his wife Diti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. And what did he speak? Oh beautiful woman, oh irreproachable lady, since I am very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain either in this world or in the next? So these are the kind of words he's speaking in his vulnerability as a husband, because his wife has momentarily charmed him with her behavior. And in that, he is calling her irreproachable. Oh, irreproachable lady. Her desire, what was her desire? To kill Indra. How can that behavior be called as irreproachable by any means and terms? It can't be. But still he is calling her, oh, irreproachable lady. This shows his vulnerability as a husband, simply because she spoke to him nicely. Okay. In one sense, this is the power of sweet speech. This is the power of sweet speech. Many global leaders who are very, very intelligent and who are very, very strategic have been easily captured by the sweet words and behavior of a woman. And countries have fallen down because of that. Right? So this is how vulnerable one is. So 31 and 32 talk about that vulnerability. However, if you see 33 words, 33 and 34 are combined, it talks about a different side of Kashyapa Muni. It talks about the wise side of Kashyapa Muni. Let's read again to understand. He now says, a husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. Now he's talking Shastras. The supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva, which means now he is already in the mode of transcendental goodness, because talking about the Lord now. The supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruitive workers. So quickly, Kashyapa Muni is showing the wisdom that I know you are speaking these sweet words out of fruitive mentality, not because you have certain some love for me coming in your heart. So this is the wisdom, his vulnerability, and suddenly, you know, his wisdom as a Muni is coming now. So then he says, similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. So he's, you know, so this is very interesting. Now, the opening statement of Kashyapa Muni, if you see, a husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. This is a big statement. Right? So this statement is metaphorical in its nature. We have to understand that. We can't take it literally. It is metaphorical in one sense. Why I am saying it can be taken literally in certain situations only. But generally it is metaphorical, especially the current age as husbands. Most husbands. Right? We saw in the newspapers, in India, it's a big thing that is going on right now. I don't know how many of you heard this. This person, she left her parents to marry this particular man, who she met on some Instagram or something like that. This girl went and married this man against the desires and advice of her family. She fought with her father, everything, and she married this person. And this man, he murdered her. He killed her, chopped her, and then threw her body parts all over to avoid, any police detection. And now he has been caught. Now all those worms are coming out. So much for love marriage and eloping with someone, trusting that person. So therefore, when you see today in this context, the husband is a supreme demigod for a woman. What? Right? If people who are friends of that lady read this first statement of Kashyapa Muni from Srimad Bhagavatam, they will lose faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a nonsense. What a fanatical statement. So, therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is not accessible for people who are subjugated by the three modes of material nature. That the Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam has to be understood also very carefully. If spoken in front of an immature audience, the woman will take up cudgels. Right? If you go and say in that statement, the husband is a supreme, you know, demigod for a woman. How can you say that? Because there is a context to it. However, if we observe closely the next immediate lines of translation, we see what is Kashyapa Muni trying to tell here to Diti. We cannot see that one line in isolation. The husband is a supreme demigod for a woman. can't see that in isolation. We have to see it in its integration with the points that are coming downstream. What are those? The point he's trying to make is not simply glorifying the male gender or the male species in saying that. He's not coming from a male chauvinistic point of view or a hedonistic mentality that I am the husband, no. Therefore, husband is a supreme demigod for a woman. No, he's not coming. He's a muni at the end of the day. Let's understand that. He's not an ordinary conditioned soul. So why will a muni make such a statement? He uses the analogy of supreme demigod for a husband to show what is the mood with which common people worship the demigods. That is what he's trying to show by using that metaphor. He's trying to get and make his wife understand that I know, my dear wife, why you are approaching me. Suddenly, why this nicety towards me? Prabhuji, why suddenly this behavior, right? You are trying to please me from your own fruitive mentality. You have certain vested interests and you have carefully with a cold-blooded approach you have come to me. You have thought through it very nicely. You know that I am powerful enough to grant a benediction. You have thought through very nicely and with a manipulative mentality you have approached me for your own interest. So your glorification is not reflecting any true affection for me. Therefore, he is saying the husband is a supreme demigod for a woman in that sense. Because the husband, as people approach demigods with a fruitive mentality and sing the glories of the demigods with a vested interest for fruitive results thereafter. Similarly, I know that you are approaching me like this. And then he compares Diti's worship or veneration or behavior unto him coming from a fruitive platform. So that's what he's establishing at the outset. So he's telling his wife, I'm not a fool. I understand, right? Yes, you spoke to me sweetly, so now I'm obliged to do something for you, but please understand, I know you very well. Why you are telling this, right? Of course, being a muni, being a devotee of the Lord, Kashyapa Muni will not give a benediction which will ultimately be harmful for his wife. That is the devotee, Vaishnava aspect of Kashyapa Muni. Therefore, his benediction ultimately gives results to the Maruts. Right? Now, Srila Prabhupada's purports, but for Srila Prabhupada's purports, we would not have understood this verse. When you study Srila Prabhupada's purports, then Srila Prabhupada's mood comes out in this purport. So he brings out the mood of Kashyapa Muni very well by writing a very appropriate purport here. So Srila Prabhupada's purports here reiterate the same mentality that Kardama Muni seems to have comprehended of his wife. If you see bulk of Srila Prabhupada's purport that we read today, it exposes the selfish mood. It exposes the selfish mood with which the pious living entities approach the demigods, the celestial beings. So I was doing a program in some suburb, last week. So it was a guest lecture program. So I had just gone there and I was talking to some people. And one lady said, I worship all the Devi Devatas. Sab mere liye priya hai. Everyone is, on Monday I worship X, on Tuesday I worship Y, on Wednesday I fast for Z, on Thursday I worship A, Friday B, Saturday C, and Sunday D. So I worship like that. Then I told her there are 16,108. What about the others? She said, I can't, at least, all these people. I said, why specifically zeroing on these people? She said, because they have all been instrumental in my life. So, our approach or worship towards the demigods is like the treasury department handles corporate finance in a company. Invest little bit in US dollars, invest little bit in Japanese yen, invest little bit in euros, invest little bit in Canadian dollar, invest in Indian rupee, invest in Australian dollar. In case one fails, the other will bail you out. No? That is our approach towards devatas. In case Lord Ganesh is not incidentally pleased, you know, let me worship, you know, Durga Devi also. Lest she doesn't hear me on a day, at least Sai Baba will help me. So hedge your foreign exchange. Don't have any affection towards any one single. Don't have faith in anyone. Hedge yourself. Spread yourself wide. And call it as, I am very secular in my worship. Under the name of secularism, do anything. Right? Whereas, Lord Krishna cuts this mentality in Bhagavad Gita saying, Vyavasayatmika buddhi rekeha kurunandana. Bahushakahi anantascha buddhayo avyavasayinam. Unless we have single-pointed focus towards Krishna, then what happens? Bahu shakha. Our mind is many branch. Shakha means branch. It will go here, there, everywhere. So therefore, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, focus on me alone. And that is the point that Prabhupada is also trying to hammer in today's purport. Right? So, Prabhupada is talking about fixation towards Krishna. Now somebody may ask, I have fixation, but not to Krishna. Somebody may say, I am fixed. Ma Durge and Ma Durge alone. Koi nahi. Right? So what does it? Now what happens when that happens? What about a fixation to a particular demigod? Now, we have to understand that if you probe deeper into why that person is fixed, has that fixation towards a demigod, what will you usually find? Just probe a little bit deep. Don't get intimidated. Don't start doubting the philosophy. Just probe a little deep, that's all. In 2 seconds it will come out. Fixation towards a particular demigod is usually also, usually it is not based on bhakti. Usually. 99% it is not. Some 1% case may be there. It is not based out of bhakti. The platform of such fixation to a demigod, also we will usually observe that it is based on some positive reciprocation or adjustment of karma that has happened as a result of worshipping some demigod. I was explaining in my Bhakti Vriksha program last Friday, because we are talking about the topic of demigods. I was giving the example of one lady, Mrs. Gupta, who used to stay in our building many years back. So, she was very Devi Ma. So then my mother asked her, what bhakti to Devi? And she was. Every Friday, she will call building people and she will give chana. Along with something like that. Okay, every Friday. Even we will not worship Lord Krishna with such fixation. She worshipped, you know, like that. So then we asked one day, Mataji, what happened? How come this bhakti has come to Durga Devi, Santoshi Mata? She started crying. She said, my son, we were in the United States. My son was swimming in the swimming pool. And then my son suddenly drowned. And then I worshipped. I called out, Durga Ma, please help me. And then what happened? Lo and behold, she helped. The lifesaver came, dived inside, took out my son. And since that day, my life is for Santoshi Mata. Now, is this wrong? Not at all. Not at all. This is actually very, very good. Because this shows gratitude. This shows gratitude. Without gratitude, we are not even human beings, right? So definitely Prabhupada says that we must have gratitude towards the demigods. But the problem is that she never tried to understand what Durga Devi wants. She loves Durga Devi because she gave an outcome in her life in terms of what she wanted at that time. The rescue of her son, which is good. And out of gratitude she worships Durga Devi. There's no doubt about it. Nothing wrong with it. It must be done. However, she failed to understand what is Durga Devi's will. And what is Durga Devi's will? Srishti sthiti pralaya sadhana shakti reka chayeva yasya bhuvanani bibharti Durga ichchanu rupam api yasya chachestatesa govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. Durga Devi herself conducts herself in accordance with the will of Krishna. Now this Mrs. Gupta did not understand. because she never had exposure to Srila Prabhupada's books. She never read the Brahma Samhita. So for her, Durga Devi was the all in all. So sometimes we will see in this material world, even fixation with a particular demigod has got something to do with a particular circumstance. Does it happen with Lord Krishna also? Our faith with Lord Krishna also? Unfortunately, yes. Right? We also go to Lord Krishna and says, Lord Krishna, I'm chanting 16 rounds, following 4 regulatory principles, I'm trying my best not to offend Vaishnava. Now you please remove this problem in my life. We go to Krishna also with fruitive mentality. We also have fixation towards Lord Krishna. Thanks to Srila Prabhupada, all of us, we can say we have fixation to Lord Krishna at least. But we go to Krishna. Anytime some problem comes, what happens? Even if our hand gets burnt in that, when cooking, when frying papadam, what happens? Krishna! We say, right? That means what? By default, Prabhupada has made that conditioning. Earlier, before coming to Krishna consciousness, what he would have said? Ouch! That is what he would have said. Now it's Krishna! Like that. At least that has come. Spontaneously, what happens? Our mind is calling out to Krishna. Or if some danger happens, then say, Lord Narasimha Deva. No, at least this is Prabhupada has at least given us that. But still, we are still in the fire of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. We have still not got over our fruitive mentality. So we go with our desires to Lord Krishna. But still, this is not in the same league as Mrs. Gupta. Right? Why? The Lord Himself says, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam. I accept. So even going to Lord Krishna at a time of distress is acceptable. Rupa Goswami says, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. The word Sita refers to what? That approaching Lord Krishna to relieve oneself from material distress is not precluded from the domain of bhakti. It is not outside the domain of bhakti. So if we are asking Lord protection from some danger, then the Lord still considered as bhakti only. Right? It still comes under pure bhakti. Of course, we don't go to the Lord Krishna and say, Lord, I'm going for auction next week. Please do some magic so that, you know, nobody turns up for the auction and I get it well below the reserve price. Now this is nonsense. This is not distress. Right? This is not relief from distress. This is something else. Lord says, why do you want big house? You can worship me anywhere if you want. Correct, no? So this is, we have to understand. We don't put our aspirations on the Lord, saying the Lord, for your pleasure, I will do big program in that house. Program you can do in any house. From our Bhakta Bhavan, so many devotees have come. What is the size of Bhakta Bhavan? Right? So program you can do anywhere. So we have to accept that. We have to accept humbly that we have material desires. Okay, no tricking the Lord, right? But because Prabhupada has given us one-pointedness, at least the good part is we go with those material desires to Lord Krishna. At least that's a good part. But what if Lord Krishna does not fulfill that desire? That is a test of our single-pointedness. Then do we say, it doesn't work, mate. Let me go back to Ma Durga and see what happens now. No. Let me go to her. Do we do that? No, obviously not. We don't do that. Right? We don't hedge beyond Lord Krishna. Initially, in the initial stages of devotional service, we may get upset with the Lord. Have you got upset with the Lord? You don't have to raise your hand, but you know you have. Sometimes we do get upset. Lord, why you are not removing this problem in my life? You know I'm crying to you since the last, few years. But somehow or the other, why did you put me in this situation? What have I done? How can you just stand there with a flute smiling like this when I'm terrified in my life? And I'm still worshipping you only, day in and day out. Right? So sometimes the mind can give such, develop such, has a tendency to develop such mood towards, inimical mood towards the Lord also, where we tell Him, why are you doing this? But that's because of our own conditioning. But in one class I was hearing, we may think that Lord is not under control, but the Lord is always under control. He knows what He is doing in our lives. We may think He is not in control, but He is the supreme controller. Right? But we may not understand it because we are right now lamenting under the subjugation of the three modes of material nature. It is easy to lecture in a Vyasasana, but going through that situation is difficult, right? We know it is, but we can't help it. Sometimes it happens in life like that, right? But still, we have to understand, whatever it is, just staying in the process of Krishna consciousness, we are safe in the long run. In the short term, Krishna may give whatever he wants to do. But in the long term, Lord is in control. So he knows through all those difficulties where he is taking us. He knows exactly where he is leading us to. We may not know. We may think he has given us up. Or we may have tendency to give him up also. That is possible, right? So therefore, the devotee's mood towards worshipping Lord Krishna, Prabhupada is contrasting in this purport, okay, with the mood with which the karmis approach the demigods. So similarly, Prabhupada is giving in, you know, this analogy here, that similarly husband and wife relationship nowadays has also become similar, based on satisfying each other's material desires and aspirations. And as long as grihastha ashram, as long as householder life is based on this principle, then that married life will be finished in due course, right? In India, we have seen even most of the parents are also not educated in the scriptures. So if you go and ask, let's say someone who is not exposed to Krishna consciousness, or even someone who is new to Krishna consciousness, do you have a daughter? Yes. What kind of bridegroom do you want for your daughter? What kind of bridegroom? If you are the father of a daughter, how do you want your son-in-law to be? Tell me. Aladdin comes and asks. Ask and thou shall get. What will you ask? He should be. Dikhne mein thoda bahut 19-20 chalta hai. He should be good looking, right? Think about. Now meditate very carefully. We are devotees. We know we are not this body. But do we aspire for our daughters to be married to someone who is good looking, at least? We don't know. Some people may say, okay, it doesn't matter, right? But outside world, if you look at 100%, they are looking for someone who is good looking. But if you tell them that the person looks very good, but he's kangal number one, he doesn't have, he's bankrupt, what will happen? No, we'll compromise on little bit looks okay, but bankrupt, no. He should also have little bit of the moolah, the money. He should have money, right? Then you say, I have found someone, very good looking, and lot of money, but little bit, you know, crack. No. He tried getting through the education system somehow, but, you know, school dropout and, you know, kind of. But very good looking, huh? Lot of money is there. No, he should be intelligent also. Right? He should be intelligent also. Now, if all these criteria are met, okay, then someone says he's very, you know, good looking, intelligent, everything. But he has only one problem. He can beat your daughter. Very good looking, very wealthy, top class intelligent. He studied in IIT, Harvard University. You know, only one problem. He can beat your daughter. Will you give? I know. Right? So despite having all these qualities, what he should be? He should be humble. He should massage the feet of the father-in-law and mother-in-law also. Will you get such a person in this world? Maybe. But most likely not. Right? So therefore, even as parents, our expectations are like that. Right? So if we have such expectations, why should we blame our daughter if she also has expectations like this of the ideal husband? Ticking all the boxes. And the husband also wants the wife to tick all the boxes. She should be obedient, like she should be educated from IIM Ahmedabad and as humble as Mother Sita. No. She should bring in money also so that the mortgage can be paid, double income. Mortgage can come. And she should be capable to bring money inside. At the same time, she should also take care of all household responsibilities. I am the man in the house. No. So husbands also have such mentalities, right? So therefore, with such mentality, marriages are not going to work. Right? So, husband and wife's relationship, usually we see in the outside world, is also based on satisfying each other's material desires and fulfilling each other's material expectations of one another. Such a husband, there is only one person. Who is that? Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashriya jnana vairagyasya shannam bhaga itingana. Person who has got all these character qualities in full. So the daughter can only marry Lord Krishna to be happy. Nobody else. But is it possible? Practically possible? We can say how nice it will be. Right? But sometimes the daughter says, okay, I am going, like Andal. Andal wanted to marry Sri Ranganatha, right? Like our daughter also says that, she wants to marry the deities. How many parents will be able to digest it, even though being in Krishna consciousness, right? Difficult, right? So therefore, mostly, even as practicing devotees, our daughters will be married to imperfect men. And even as practicing devotees, our sons could be married to imperfect women. We have to accept this reality. And the daughter and son also should know that my husband is not, I should not put him on the pedestal of Kashyapa Muni. Right? And husband also should not say that, she should be like Mother Sita. Husband is neither Ramchandra nor wife is Mother Sita. Reality of this material world, even as devotees, is going to be this. And it's better to accept it. Material life is not going to become any different in its challenges. Yes? Of course, as devotees, we may make little bit more judicious decisions than what non-devotees, because at least we have the framework of the Shastras. At least we can see the whole concept of marriage with a spiritual lens. But there is no guarantees. Right? And who knows, out of such marriage, Lord Krishna may have a plan to purify us as Vaishnavas in a different way. Therefore, he may give us challenges in that marriage also. That is also possible. That's why we see, even sometimes two Vaishnavas marry, it may not work. Because the Lord may have other plans. He may want some mentality to go away from both those people. Of course, as devotees, we try as much as possible. Like Prabhupada said, there is no divorce once married. In devotional life, usually one does not think of that option at all. We try to work out and we try to go deeper and deeper and try to find out what does Lord Krishna want out of this. Right? So, in this verse, if you see, the Prabhupada and Kashyapa Muni specifically is bringing out this aspect that this particular section is talking more about the wife's responsibilities. It talks about the fact that the wife can actually easily over the husband if she speaks sweetly. And this is not the first time that it is coming in Srimad. In earlier sections also, Prabhupada writes this. What are the two things that can win the heart of a man? Good cook and sweet words. Right? Good cook, nicely made gulab jamun, throws it at the husband. Take gulab jamun. I've made it. Eat and finish. Go to work now. Gulab jamun is not tasting only sweet, right? But if she says, please, Prabhuji, baithiye na, khaiye na. Please sit. Please accept my humble offering unto your lotus feet. Of course, we don't speak all that. But even with a smile, if she says, hey, it's your, gulab jamun you like, no? I have made gulab jamun for you. Husband will eat, right? Even if gulab jamun, little bit less sugar is there, still it's okay. Because the sweetness of the word compensates for the sugar in the gulab jamun. Right? Otherwise, with harsh words, gulab jamun may have too much of sugar, but it will give a bitter taste with harsh words. So that is what is pointed out. So actually, the job of a lady is actually very simple. Keeping the marriage this one, two tips which Prabhupada gives can save marriages. You know, big failures can be saved by this simple principle of putting a point sweetly. Of course, there are many things that ladies can do. I learned from one example, you know, in Mumbai. There was one temple, Chopati temple in Mumbai. And there was this Mataji. Her husband was not coming to the temple. The wife used to come. But very regularly, Nishtha. Every morning she will be there in the temple. Mangala Arati and deity worship, everything. All boxes ticked very nicely. So one day when she was sitting after that and she was talking to one of the saints who is attached to the temple. So she was asking this Swami, this Maharaj. The Maharaj observed her. This particular Maharaj, he observed her and asked her that, where is your husband? So she said, actually my mother-in-law is not well. Therefore my husband, you know, is taking care of his mother, my mother-in-law. And you know, I'm coming for services in the temple because he's taking care of her. So what did he advise her? Maharaj advised her that from tomorrow, can you do something? Tomorrow onwards, you take care of mother-in-law and let husband come to the temple. And that was a master stroke advice. Master stroke. The husband became one of the biggest congregational preachers in that congregation. From the starting point where the husband was not coming to the temple regularly. That was the point. Right? The husband can be easily won over if simply the wife starts respecting the husband's mother. Yes. The husband's mother is not a perfect woman. Are we perfect? Are we perfect? Do we guarantee that when we become mother-in-laws, we will become perfect? The perfect mother-in-law I will be. Can anyone guarantee that? No way. Nobody can guarantee. It's arrogance to think that I am perfect, right? So there will be some imperfections. I'm not talking about extreme cases, right? Where the mother-in-law says, bring dowry or I will pour kerosene, petrol and set you ablaze. We are not saying, Hari Bol, please put more petrol. No, I am Vaishnav. No. We are not talking about being foolhardy here. That common sense everyone has. We are talking about the small things. What is the small thing? Wife wants to cook brinjal. Mother-in-law wants to cook bitter gourd. Is this a point to fight with mother-in-law? Okay, come on, let go. Let go. Don't fight over small, small things. These small, small bickering. So we really have to understand, is this a small problem or is it something big problem? Small problems become big because of what? The big things which sits on our head. What is that called? That? False ego, ahankar. Small thing. Okay, make brinjal or bitter. How does it matter? Both are good vegetables. If mother-in-law is saying something, okay, do it. If mother-in-law says, okay, today, as per our customs, you have to say Lalita Sahasranamam. Okay. No. Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeh kuru nandana bahushaka hi anantascha buddhayo avyavasayanam. I will only chant Brahma Samhita. I will not chant Durga Sostra. If wife is becoming fanatical like this, husband is, no, both will be excellent devotees, but marriage is set for failure, utter failure. Why? Because, now what is wrong? Okay, fine, if it creates peace in the family, and anyway, she is not asking you to cut meat. Is she asking you to cut meat? She is asking you to worship Goddess Durga. So what is the problem? Prabhupada also said, respect the demigods. By such behavior, actually, the wife, the daughter-in-law can endear herself to the mother-in-law. In that sense, after that, the mother-in-law is so pleased that she will ask the daughter-in-law, you are so happy and such a nice human being. How come you are such a nice human being, always having this nice mentality and attitude, even when I trouble you? And then what does the daughter-in-law say? That's because, you know, Krishna gives me that strength from within. And then what happens? You have set a positive affirmation in the mind of the mother-in-law about the positive power of Krishna Bhakti, rather than by our behavior set a negative example of being a devotee through our fanatical approach. So therefore, the job of a woman is actually very easy. All we have to do is, you know, give priority to harmonious relationships over operating on a platform of fanaticism or operating on a foundation purely based on our own false ego. So the process is very simple. So Prabhupada, in this section, it is coming out very beautifully that it is very easy to maintain a married life. Of course, it doesn't mean husband doesn't have any responsibility. Husband also has responsibility. What is the duty of a husband? When is the married life peaceful? When the husband gives quality time to wife. Quality time. What is quality time? What is quality time? Quality time does not mean, okay, let us sit, husband and wife, let us sit together and always we will converse Srimad Bhagavatam with each other. Nice, I am not saying no. But let us be normal human beings also, no? If the wife is going through, for example, no, some, let us say, wife is not well, okay? The husband says, you should not lament for that which is not worthy of lamentation. Bhagavad Gita says that we are not this body. Now this is correct only. Technically you are correct. Scripturally you are correct. But it is a foolish... If husband keeps on telling like this, what happens? She'll say, hey, can you be a normal human being for a change? Because devotees are expected to be normal human beings. Krishna himself, when Satyabhama was angry, what did Lord Krishna do? I am the supreme personality of Godhead. You can't get angry at me, come on. The whole world worship me as Vishnu, Vishnu karke bulate hain mujhe. And you getting angry at me? Me? Does he say like that? No. What does he say? He goes to Satyabhama, he says, Devi, what happened? Why? And Narad Muni is observing all that. Krishna is combing the hair of his wife. Right? Can we be that husband? If we do that, do you think the Lord will not be pleased? I'm not saying everyone should comb wife's hair. I'm not saying that. I'm just giving an example. The Lord himself also shows loving affection towards his wife. So why do you think we in his bhakti don't have to do that? Why are we thinking like that? Right? So it is this mutual affection that will sustain married life. So being a devotee automatically means being a good husband. It is not something separate. When we separate the principles of household life from the principles of bhakti, we will make the biggest mistake in our life. That is why Prabhupada said, Grihastha Ashram. Ashram, everything of Krishna consciousness comes under the word ashram. Ashram means taking shelter of the Lord. Ashram means conducting ourselves in householder life in accordance with that which pleases Krishna. That is when we are taking shelter of Krishna. That is when ashram will come. Right? So therefore, this section is bringing out the simple principles of Grihastha Ashram very well. This section teaches us how by just letting go of our small false ego, we can actually save ourselves from going through the danger of separation in a Grihastha Ashram. So very nice section. And many more points are there about, you know, the duties of how a woman can win over a husband in this particular section. Of course, in another section, Prabhupada will also talk about how husband, what's the duties of a husband towards a wife. Bhagavatam is not gender biased because Bhagavatam is Amala Puran, right? Bhagavatam is for everyone. In that sense, Bhagavatam is the most secular scripture that we can see. So this is the mood of this particular section. So in the ensuing sections, we will see how Kardama Muni is dealing with his wife, and out of his wisdom, the way he is dealing, what good outcomes come in this married life as offsprings which are demigods, while otherwise she has up till now only been producing asuric children. That will come in the future. I'll stop here. We have 5 more minutes for any questions, corrections, or any points. Yes, Madhuri. Yes. 1 minute, take the mic.
Thank you for the nice class. We've seen this pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj. When he lost his son, his wife started blaming the Lord for for the son. And then we see in Draupadi's pastime, when Ashwatthama killed her sons, she forgave him. And then again we see here in Niti's pastime, she wants to take revenge. So when we are having difficulties, how can we understand what to do? To forgive a person, to take revenge from them, or to blame them, something.
Okay. So when we are in difficulty, how do we make a decision whether to forgive the person or to chastise?
The person, to forgive the person or to take revenge from that person.
How do we take such decision? Vengeful mentality is not conducive for Krishna Bhakti. There is no doubt about that. There is no doubt about that. To get back at someone is not in line or aligned with the principles of Krishna Bhakti. Okay. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2 itself talks about what? Matra sparshastu kaunteya sita ushna sukha dukha daha agamapayino anityastam sikshashva bharata. Which means, in this material world, which has been designed to give us frustrations, it has been designed, this material world is not designed to give us eternal happiness. It is we, out of our foolishness, think that no problems will come in our life. And therefore we tend to lose our faith in Krishna, or we tend to blame others for our difficulties. Okay. But at the very outset, Bhagavad Gita itself says that devotees have to develop tolerance and resilience to go through the difficult, different challenges that the material world poses. Now the question is, given these challenges, how do we respond? Do we pardon or do we punish? Okay, that's the question. Let us take an example. Okay. Since I saw Mataji, I'm remembering this example. Okay. Your car was burnt, right? By someone, right? So there is some druggie who came outside our building, okay, and he was operating in this area. He burnt her car and went away. Now if that person comes, what do? We say, I pardon you. Here is my other car. I have one more car. Can you please burn that car also? I am very compassionate on all living souls. Do we do that? No. That is being foolish. Okay. So, giving chastisement is not wrong. Not everything can be pardoned. Right? Pardoning something out of our own delusion that I am a good person is foolishness. Does it make sense? Sometimes people pardon others not out of compassion, because they want to show others that I am a very good person, right? Which means that decision is not transcendental. It is still within the material mode of goodness. So we don't pardon when that situation does not warrant pardon. The situation has to warrant pardon. For pardoning someone, that person, again I am repeating something which I have told in earlier classes also. For pardoning someone, the person has to show three things. Three R's. Remember three R's. The person has to first recognize that I am at fault. Then you can pardon. Right? Not only recognize, but the person also has to feel remorse about what he or she did. Right? Otherwise, did you burn my car? Yeah, I burnt your car. So what? Will you pardon such person? He has recognized. Yeah, I burnt. But recognition has to be followed with what? Remorse. I'm so sorry that, I burnt your car. That is the second step, when you can say, okay, this person has taken two steps towards being pardoned. But after the person says, I feel very sorry, but you know what? Again they come and burn your car. And say, you know what? I don't know. Somehow I had this habit of burning cars. Will you pardon that person? No, it's your habit. No, it's okay. You have recognized, you feel sorry also. But I feel sorry genuinely every time I burn a car. Can you pardon that person? So the third step is what? Rectification. Recognition, remorse and rectification. If that person has rectified or says that I'm going to work towards it, I'm going to rectify, I'll not do it again, then you don't go and beat up that person. You remember, you burned my car, therefore I'm going to kill you now. Okay? I'm sorry I used that example, I'm so sorry, but suddenly that came into my mind. But if a person is a habitual drug addict, he should be put in jail and he should be hung after that. Because he's risking the lives of so many people, he's a nuisance to society, so give capital punishment. And that is a problem with many countries who are not doing this. Okay, they just give some counseling and let the person go. And person say, hang on, I can go on repeating this offense, nothing is happening to me. That is nonsense. In the mode of goodness, we think, you know, we are very good society, you know, very pardoning. But pardon should be where it deserves pardon. So, dand or punishment, actually, now when should we punish? Is punishment bad or good? Punishment is good if the intent of punishment is reformation and not revenge. I am repeating. Punishment is good if the intention behind the punishment is reformation and not resentment or revenge. Does this answer your question? Yeah? Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
You give an example when we are going through difficulty or when we are crying in front of the Lord, mm-hmm. and we may come and pray to Krishna that, you know, you are just standing there with the flute and not doing anything. But even in that situation, Krishna, we may not be in control and we may not know that Krishna is in control, but Krishna is definitely in control. How to have that kind of strong faith or understanding? How to develop that kind of consciousness?
How to develop that kind of faith? So, I'm translating your question in a different way. Bhakti has got various stages. Bhakti starts with what? Shraddha. Then Sadhu Sangha. Then Bhajana Kriya. Then Anartha Nivritti. And then comes Nishtha. What is the difference between Shraddha and Nishtha? Both are faith. Nishtha also means faith. Shraddha also means faith. But still there is a difference between Shraddha and Nishtha. Shraddha means loose faith. Whereas Nishtha means strong faith, which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur calls as condensed faith. Strong faith, right? So, we are not in the platform of Nishtha today. Therefore, when we are faced with very, very difficult situations in our life, sometimes our loose faith, we have faith, so that faith keeps us continued in our Krishna consciousness. But because that faith is loose, we tend to blame the Lord, thinking that He does not understand what is good for us, or He is being too hard on us, like that. That is just a symptom. It just tells us that I am in the stage of Anartha Nivritti. It just tells us that. That's all. So what to do now? The answer is simple. Continue the process of bhakti. Consult devotees. Okay, devotees are very helpful. We have to consult devotees who have that faith. There is no other way. Because only a devotee who has stronger faith than we have in Krishna, only that devotee will be able to keep us fixed in that situation. If we ask another devotee, he says, yeah, even I am going through a lot of problem and I also thinking, what nonsense going on Krishna is doing. You know, if he starts speaking like that, what happens? Then you say, yeah, two people with loose faith are conversing with each other now, right? So therefore, we have to take shelter of people who have that higher faith. Especially, it is good to discuss with those devotees who have gone through a similar problem that we have gone through and still they have come out at the other end, keeping their bhakti intact. That is a practical step that we can take, you know, in that sense. Of course, personally, sometimes what helps me is immediately studying Srimad Bhagavatam, taking shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, because Srimad Bhagavatam has that magical power to somehow lift us beyond the three modes of material nature the moment we come in contact with it. It has got the power because it is what? Krishna Swadhama Upagate Dharma Jnana Adibisaha. Kalo Nashta Drishamesha Purana Arka Aduna Uditaha. Krishna himself has come in the book form. So this is Krishna only associating with the Lord himself and his instructions and pastimes. So sometimes hearing a good lecture, good class, which talks about how to face adversities in life, or how to, you know, how devotees have done that, who have gone through such adversities, these are some of the things that can help. Hare Krishna. Okay, it's now 9:05, so I think I should stop. Okay, so if there are any other questions, we'll take it offline. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Samaved Bhaktavrinda ki jai.